Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, listeners, before we get started with today's episode of Bench with Bubba, special promotion for you. If you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports and live for the short-term gratification of DFS, then you have to try out weekly fantasy sports on OwnerBox. Head on over to rotoballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly fantasy sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged through live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner's Box will be paying out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through the first ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. But that's not it. Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit of up to $100. Just head on over to www.rotoballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your $100 bonus and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports. Before we get started with tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba, wanted to talk to you real quick about the giveaways we have coming up for the month of December. Thank you to the lovely listeners of the Bench with Bubba podcast. I tweeted it out. Again, if you can follow me on Twitter at BDIntric, you'll get all the info there. But if you give a rate and review on iTunes of this podcast, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a handful of prizes from Baseball HQ, Pitcher List, SP Streamer, our guest Derek Rhodes, and much, much more. Tweeted it all out over there on my Twitter handle. Just a rate and review on iTunes goes a long, long way to help me out on this podcast. And I'll be giving you guys a little gift as a thank you in the month of December. Starting on December 15th, the drawings will take place. If for some reason you can't leave a rating and review, you can go to the Fantasy Sports Degens YouTube page and subscribe and like the latest episode. So if you can do one of those two things, that would be great. Let me know you did it on Twitter at BDIntric, and we'll get you in the drawing. Now, enjoy episode 325 of Benched with Bubba. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 325. We got a good one, first timer on our show. He's been all over the podcast world of late, everywhere. Like, I thought I was, you know, being cool and sly about the situation, but no, everyone's on the ball on this one. You can find his work on the Twitter at DRHOA3 and at JagFantasySports.com. The one, the only, Derek Rhodes. How are we doing, man?
Man, I am doing great. It's Friday. I'm so pumped for this weekend. It's good. It's been a long week of work, so I'm excited to talk with you and then gonna do a little fantasy baseball prep.
I don't know about you, but like you're talking about doing prep. I know you've been doing prep, obviously. we've been talking and drafting, right? And you've been tweeting, and it feels like this year it's been kind of earlier than ever. But in years past, it's one of those, okay, I guess I'll start getting going, but I've been kind of jonesing for it. Like, I've been enjoying it. How have you felt about, I don't know if it was the shortened season or what it was, but it feels like almost like I want to be doing more fantasy baseball right now.
Yeah, actually, I think it's partially the shortened season for me, and partially I made the mistake, not the mistake because it was great, but I went to First Pitch Arizona 2 years ago. What is this, 2019, I guess? Or maybe that was just last year. And they had to push it up because of the way the MLB changed the schedule. And so we were at First Pitch Arizona in like October. And it was like, just started 2020 prep for me. And now my body's just like, okay, well, I guess that's just when we do this now is October. Like, you know, So I was drafting at First Pitch Arizona in 2019. So now it's just like, well, I guess this is just what we do.
It's just human nature. That's what we are. We are creatures of habit, folks.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So just feed me what I need and we will make it work. And I'm with you there. Like, I didn't go to First Pitch Arizona, but I would always
hold out on drafting. And then, you know, I started itching to do some best balls in recent years. And now I've already almost completed two. And I know that's, I know you and others are way ahead of me there, but for me, it barely being the start of December, having two drafts in the book, that's way out of context for me. And I'm already like scheduling, like you're going to be in one coming up. I have four more analyst leagues coming up. I'm trying to space them out just a little bit.
Yeah. Kind of always got one going. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just kind of see how things change as news comes in and we kind of keep getting content going. But the next one will be starting up soon. I think you'll be in the third one. I have it all written down somewhere, but you'll be coming up again. We'll talk about the first one a little later, but let's, before we just go full on best ball, let's talk about the first thing I really noticed when I started following you on Twitter was your injury tool, and people were raving about it. And I am not a smart individual, so when I see a lot of graphs and charts, I get scared. Like Alex Chamberlain is one of the smartest human beings I meet. I think you said it or someone else said it. You said it so well. Like, I read his article, and I pray there's like cliff notes at the end somewhere or something, because I know there's so much goodness in here, I can't figure it out. So when I see certain charts, I'm like, okay, this is kind of scary, but I'm trying to navigate it. Now, your injury tool is awesome because it like helps point certain directions. Why don't you let us know about the tool? Like, what was the idea behind the tool? And we'll go from there.
Okay, sure. So, and it's funny you mentioned Alex Chamberlain. So the tool, and there's two different tools, and they're both on Tableau, which is the same software that Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard's on. Although I say pitch leaderboard, it's so much more than that.
It's
now.
Got everything on it. Man.
It's insane. Yeah. But it's that same backing. And so what I really wanted was, number one, I think visuals are cool. I think things that look, that are visually appealing, I'm just more interested in looking at them. And so I was like, well, I was kind of tinkering around with Tableau, and I was like, you know what? I don't see a lot of is injury information easily accessible. You can go grab it. It should be a database. Like, it should just be at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of started tinkering with what that looked like. And that's what led to the first tool I built, which is, I call them the injury dashboards. I'll confess, none of these tools are well named. I'm an accountant by trade. Like, we use very like clinical names, and so they're not super creative. But the injury dashboards, there's one for hitters and one for pitchers. And this is a tool. This is the first thing I made. It's a great place that you can go and see every injury that has ever happened, that I shouldn't say every injury, but about 10 years worth of injury data, including day-to-day transactions and IL transactions. And you can see how long the player was out. You can see what type of injury visually. So you see there's a picture of a player. You can see, okay, was it an elbow? Was it a knee? Was it a hand? Whatever. And you could see, compare it to other injuries that happened. So it's great to see injury trends. So my guy gets hurt and I go, hey, how long is he going to be out? Team says 6 to 8 weeks. Let me go look to see how that jives with other players that have had that injury. Is it that same timeline or is it worse or better? So that's really good for broad injury strokes. The second injury tool, and this was just released this year, I call it the injury timeline tool. And this is more for specific players. So, you know, I want to go look at, Steven Strasburg's injury history. And I can go see in a kind of calendar type format, I can actually see how his injuries have happened across the seasons. And I did that because I wanted it for off-season prep. I thought it'd be a really good tool as I'm looking at individual players. And so that one's really great for right now for his team. As people are starting to do their prep, they want to kind of like, you know, start to understand maybe some injury risk, just at least get an idea of what a player's injury history is. That one's a really good one for that. And that also was the first time I started including some stats. So it has like some, pitcher fastball velocity. It's got max EV for hitters, just to try and kind of start to put injuries, kind of piece them together with how they relate to the stats players make, right? Like, cause we know that it has an effect, even if we can't always quantify it and get down to the number that it affects it. So yeah, those are the two tools right now.
I think that's, well, obviously they're awesome, but I think it's a couple of things I want to touch on is I like the idea of just, I can search a name, because you don't know how many times I write an article and I'm like, okay, I know he was hurt last year. When did he get hurt? How many times was he hurt? And I'm like Googling, you know, so-and-so's injuries from 2020. It's the worst. It's like, and to get that information should be so simple, but it is really not. It's ridiculous how difficult it is. So the fact I can go to your little deal and just go boom, boom, and it's all right here is amazing. That helps me out light years. And I know I'm not the only one there.
No, no.
Yeah, and then I love the concept of you integrating stats, because it's like, okay, the hamate bone. We all know guys lose power unless you're metal.
So right.
Okay, this is how it works.
Really, he breaks the rules, right?
Yeah, he breaks the rules. But, like, you know, hamstring injuries, calf injuries, ankles, guys with speed, how does that affect them? Obviously, it slows them down, but how much? Maybe guys are different. And it's like, it's a really cool concept, so we're not just – I know it's easy as an analyst and everything to be just like, okay, so-and-so is here. Or like you said, when a diagnosis comes, okay, it's 4 to 6 weeks. Well, some guys recover fast, some guys don't. Like, that mm-hmm. can change. And that'll make your decision on, hey, do I drop this guy? Or right, what am I doing right here? I know we'll talk best ball where none of this matters. But in the grand scheme of things, if you're paying a lot of money to be in a league, you can't hold on to dead weight. And so a tool like this helps a lot. So you're adding stats to it. Where do you envision this thing completely going? Like, what do you want it all encompassing? Do you want to like have Alex Chamberlain's have a baby with yours, or like what's your plan here?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. I do know that I would like to take it. And I was talking with somebody on Twitter about this the other day, but you know, like one of the challenges with injuries, and Jeff Zimmerman has done a ton of research on injuries. And the big problem is, number one, our sample sizes are rarely big enough to like make actionable decisions on. And to get our sample sizes big enough, we have to start becoming more vague about what type of injury. You know, you can't go, okay, well, I'm gonna look at knee injuries and go, okay, well, you know, what kind of knee injury? And you start whittling it down and it's like, well, am I getting information that's helpful? So I'm not exactly sure how much detailed I can get on stats. What I'd love to be able to do is say, okay, hammock bone injury, here's how long it takes your power to get back. And just like, here's a number, you know, and it'd be a range, but the problem is there aren't as many of those injuries as we would like. And even if you start using older injuries, you know, we get better about doing this. Guys, they've changed bats so that certain bats don't put as much pressure on the hammy bone. So it's like so much changes. I don't know how much we can draw from that, but you know, I kind of danced around the question, I guess. What I think I would like to continue finding stats that are meaningful in relationship to injury. So I think the easy right now is velocity for pitchers. Yep. Just boom. I can, you know, we know that velocity, like it's almost instant. I need one game, you know, like right, one game's worth of velocity. You can go, wait a minute, something's off here. For hitters, I think it's max exit velocity, but I don't know. And so we're kind of still experimenting. So my hope is to continue experimenting and looking. I wish I could get sprint speed granularly, like that I could get it like sprint speed before this date and after this date. But I just don't, you know, like we can with max exit velo, we just don't have that yet. So if we do get that, I would love it, because I want to see, okay, guy goes with a hamstring injury. How long before he's running at the same speed that he was before the hamstring injury, things like that. So that's where I hope to go. And I'm always kind of messing with better visuals, better ways to represent something. I'd like to create some more better baselines, like, you know, the average hamstring injury is this. Like, I'd like to create some more, better guides around that, so it's not as manual of a process. But, you know, all of it is also trying to balance time spent with, you know, benefit. You know, like, so if I'm doing something, I want to make sure that it's going to be very useful to a lot of people. So it's always a balancing act.
Yeah, no, that's the biggest thing about this is if I'm going to put all the time into it,
right,
there better be a payoff. I know some might think it sounds silly, but if you do it enough, it gets a little old real quick when the payoff isn't there. Like, mm-hmm. real quick.
Yeah, especially because this is free, right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's just like a podcast, right? I mean, you're just putting this out there for the world, you know, and so you want to know that it's benefit, you know, you're getting that kind of payout.
Exactly. That's the whole concept behind it. So it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes, because it's a cool concept, because the discussion of injuries has become more prominent in recent years as information becomes available.
Right.
And that's just kind of how the whole injuries, non-injuries, anything on a StatCast page, you name it, the more data we get, the more we can analyze things and go. And injuries is a very valuable part of that, as you mentioned. So you kind of hit the floor running with that. You mentioned Zimmerman has done a lot of great work in documenting stuff, but you've kind of put it into visual, because I'm with you. Is as a joke I make with Toby every week is, you know, he's the very, very smart analytical mind, where I'm more the caveman. And so if you can show me pictures and say like the A plus B equals C, I'm going to get a lot farther than having to read a bunch of equations on things. So
no, completely. And I should say, you know, there's a little bit of a side to that. There are some things that limits I wish we could get past, but that aren't there yet. Some of the things that tools can't do, I wish they could. So number one, they're not predictive. So like in the same way that, you know, batting average isn't predictive, you know, these injuries, they describe the injuries that have happened. It doesn't necessarily mean it'll definitely happen that way again. Mm-hmm. So we can use it to kind of guide our thought process, but it's not, I wish it was a little more accurate where I could just say, well, look, here's what it is.
Sadly, that's never going to happen. Technology, recovery changes. It's never going to happen. And they always have something we don't know about.
Yeah. So. Well, and then on top of that, the data we get is often vague. Like teams are not upfront about what's going on. Like, I think Matt Chapman's a great example. Last year, they're like, yeah, he's got a hip thing. But, you know, we're going to, like, initially they're like, that's not a big deal. I was like, well, no, he had hip surgery. Like,
needed hip surgery. Like,
yes, it was like, you know, less than like a week or two later, it's like, oh yeah, no, hip surgery. It's like, oh, okay. So it wasn't just nothing, you know? And it's like, so like that doesn't help. No. And then I'm not a doctor. I said I was an accountant. That's all I am. And so like, you know, I'm kind of limited to that extent. So sometimes people ask me stuff on Twitter and I'm always happy to kind of, you know, bounce back and forth. Like, but I don't have the medical background. So, you know, it's always good to fall back on these folks who are, you know, there's some great people on Twitter who do the fantasy baseball specific, you know, and they have medical backgrounds, they have physio backgrounds, stuff like that. And this tool in no way replaces it. And in my mind, it's a supplement and a kind of an addition to what they're doing, you know, cause they can't always be saying something like right then. So, you know, it gives us an immediate thing to start creating some boundaries and then they can kind of help filter down and tell us what's going on later.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I like it. I like it. I'm looking forward to seeing where it can go because it's going to be interesting again this year. I have a feeling is it might not be a smooth sailing of a start to the season that guys, you know, even Eno Saris is already saying he expects the pitcher injuries already. Like,
it's I was going to reference that. Yeah. I saw him. He tweeted that the other day and that's what kind of made me do a, you know, mental note to look and see at 2020 injuries and see if I can kind of create some, just put some numbers to that so people can kind of see it. Because, I would tend to agree. You got all these guys. You know, it doesn't matter that in my mind, and this is just kind of, you know, I know these, you know, these guys have been pitching kind of, you know, offside, or maybe they weren't, you know, maybe during, you know, when things were shut down, they were pitching at home or whatever. That's, we know that there's been research done on, like pitcher injuries as a result of like stress related pitching. So pitching under duress, pitching, you know, in intense situations is more stressful on pitchers than pitching, you know, with nobody on and things like, you know, like things like that. And so like, I'm pretty concerned about pitchers next year. I'm very nervous. Well, nervous isn't the right word. I am going to be very cautious about the types of pitchers that I'm drafting because I think the injuries, and it doesn't mean any pitchers are safe, but like, it's coming.
Yep, it's coming. And we will definitely hit that up here in a minute, but we'll transition to best ball now because I wanted to hit on that shortly. Yeah. But first, before we get into actual best ball strategies, the other kind of tool you've built is the best ball draft dashboard, which I think is really cool because for Fantrax, because there really isn't a spot to find fantasy baseball, best ball ADP in many places. So where do you get this information? Like, do you have access to all these drafts or how does this all come to be?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. So one, I track my own ADP. So every draft I'm in, I get the draft results for. I track it. I have a way to do that. Fantrax does not, unlike BB10s or NFBC data, you can't go download best ball specific data from Fantrax. So what you see in the draft room, that is just Fantrax best, or that is all their leagues. It's all grouped together. So a lot of times I'll post ADP data on Twitter. The best ball draft sheet is a tool that's designed to help players who are either not comfortable making spreadsheets. They think it's a hassle. It actually comes preloaded with the settings for Fantrax best ball. You can upload your favorite, projections from Fangraphs and then you can also use it to help track your draft as you're going on. So Fantrax is great. When you're doing a draft, you can download the draft results into an Excel file. You copy and paste this into the draft tool, and all of a sudden you're tracking draft results instead of having to hand enter or go click a guy and say he was entered, stuff like that. Some things that other draft trackers use. And it gives you a dashboard to kind of say, okay, well, here's where Steamer has the best projected players in the league. Here's who's left. Here's how my team's doing relative to the other teams, you know, pitching, hitting. It also gives you the ability to add custom projections if you disagree with Steamer, things like that. So it's really just designed to be a cheap. It's $5. You know, I'm trying to make best ball specifically as accessible as possible, because I think more so than other drafting, I just think there's less resources out there for it than some of the other formats. Roto, you can go out, you can go get, Fangraphs has their auction calculator. That's great. You could use it for best ball. In my opinion, I think you want something a little different, but it would work. I mean, you could put the points system, but this prevents people from having to do that. And so this is very, catered for the best ball Fantrax product. And so I tried to make it really affordable. It's $5. It's on Google Sheets, so you can use it on your computer. You can use it on your phone. There's a couple walkthroughs trying to explain how to use it. Just so if somebody's like, hey, I've never done a best ball before. I'm not sure how these players are, for $5, you can just kind of pick up and run with this, and you at least get an idea of where players are, and it will help you organize and track your draft as you're moving.
And I'd highly recommend it, obviously, because it's a great tool and Derek's a good guy, but he's very smart when it comes to best ball. And the one thing I've learned starting best balls in recent years, and I'm still learning as I do drafts, that's the fun part about each draft to draft, seeing things and the player pools and all that. The point system is not your normal Roto system.
No.
So it'll throw you. I remember last year, the year before, I did my first one, and I'm drafting away, and I'm seeing certain guys go off the board. I'm like, huh, that's weird. And then all of a sudden, I see my roster at the end, and I'm like, oh no. This is the problem. It's a big problem. So yeah, it's a different animal. Some guys have much more value. Some guys do not. So it changes things. Also with Fantrax, and I want to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
One thing that bugs me, like the NFBC, I talked to Brian Seymour about it. The NFBC format's amazing. Like the draft room.
It's a beautiful draft room.
It's everything's great. The problem for me, and I know a lot of other people, is they don't have $150+ for every league that they can play in.
Right.
So that makes things tough. And that's not a slight at them. That's just what happens. So that's where Fantrax becomes awesome. You can play for $10. You can play for all kinds of different prizes. But the NFBC 50s, I'm doing those. They're draft and hold, so they're not best ball.
Right.
But the where I'm going with this is in the NFBCs, you have like middle infield, corner infield. You have utilities, all these other deals. Where Fantrax is like first base, second base, and it's very like on NFBC, you still have guys with multi-position eligibility. But yep. Fantrax, it's like, nope, they have one position. Yeah. And so when you're a guy like me who plays a ton of Roto, and I'm like, okay, I like these guys because I know I can be flexible here and blah, blah, blah. And then you sit there and go, oh no, they only rate here. And that really burns you. So how do you go about that? Like, do you wish Fantrax would change that?
Selfishly, no. Because I'm
used to it. Well, this is an advantage for you, probably.
Yeah, I'm used to it. Actually, the biggest reason is I like to do a lot of analysis. And if you follow me on Twitter, you're probably already tired of it. I post a lot of like funky things about these leagues because they're single eligibility, they're really easy to actually just like recalculate these leagues. I can, I actually have databases where I actually track the scoring myself for these leagues. Because they're single positions, you can do it. When you start adding multi-positions, it takes a smarter programmer than me to do it. But it does force you into different decisions. I've noticed and I've done, the NFBC now has a best ball product that's a similar depth to the Fantrax product. It's 46 players. And I did one of those, and it is different when you have those multi-positions. You're just not forced into the same decisions that you are in Fantrax. So I kind of like it, but it is one of those things, like it takes a little bit of getting used to, because I think when you're drafting in with multi-position, especially this year, I don't feel like there is any position where you're like, oh, there's not enough depth at this position. Yeah. Like there's positions I like more than others, but but it's not a depth. In Fantrax, like there are some positions where you're like, whew, this one, this one's gone.
it just happened to be like in round 24, I have Yoan Moncada at third base, and you want at least two guys. And I'm sitting there going, I took Isaiah Kiner-Falefa in round 24, which I would never do on the face of the planet ever. Yep. But I'm like, I need a backup third baseman, and I might need one more still. And there's like five guys left. Yep. Like I'm screwed.
Third base is ugly in a Fantrax format. It is.
Yeah, multi-position. There's a lot of guys with third base.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, a lot of first and third guys, a lot of second and third guys, you know, things like that. You just don't have it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's one thing I continually am learning with the process. And then like shortstop, for instance, I want to get your thoughts on this. We know how deep it is. We know how top heavy awesome it is, but you don't have a middle infield, so you can't put two out there. You got one. So like say I grab Tatis, say I grab a guy's Story, Turn. You're not going to come back with another shortstop right away because you guess you could if you think somebody's going to hurt, but why? Like, what's your strategy there?
So one thing that I think can help, if you think of it, so you have all these positions, but you also have three utilities. And when you play over on the NFBC, whether it's a BB10 or if it's their new product, you have one utility spot. So you have, you know, and so sometimes I will mentally just say, okay, I actually have a middle and two utility spots, or, you know, and kind of just think of it that way and just say, look, I'm locking down. It depends on the draft, but if like in a situation where you had Tatis at I think a pretty good price, like, you know,
like a 7th or 8th overall,
you're not going to get him much better than that, right? Like he's not going to fall farther than that. So you say you take him there, and then maybe you know, you come to round 4, and for some reason Lindor is still hanging out, and you just say, you know what, screw it, I'll just double up, and then you've just got one of the utility spots filled, and then I probably wouldn't draft another shortstop if I do that. Like I'm done at shortstop,
and then that I guess that's where the strategy comes into play, where I'm thinking like. It just changes so much of the game. And I love it. That's why I'm having so much fun with it, because I love them because you get to learn the player pool. And that's one thing I always emphasize year in and year out.
Deep, the right?
Very deep player pool. Like you start seeing guys that go, oh my goodness. But it's also great because you start to see these positions where they kind of dry up, or maybe not dry up in a multi-position league. But if you have an injury or two, then it dries up pretty quick. Yeah. Like things like that, that changes where you can kind of correlate it to what you're doing elsewhere. What are some of the – you've done a handful of drafts already. I know you do a lot on Fantrax, but you do BB10s, and we had Brian Seymour tell us the differences that are there. I think I prefer the Fantrax version of things.
I'm the same way.
What are some of the big trends you're seeing? Obviously, starting pitchers flying, but what are the trends you're seeing these days?
Yeah, and I do think that is actually really worth pointing out. When I started doing Fantrax, this is, I think, my 4th year of drafting these best balls over on Fantrax. And when I first started out, people were still kind of adjusting to this idea that you have to take pitchers in this format early. And it's kind of been steadily increasing each year. People are like, okay, I get it. You know, you get more people who are more comfortable with the format. They realize there's been some drafts I've been in this year where I feel like we're almost going too far with pitchers, especially because I think we're going into a year of uncertainty with pitching. So, you know, sometimes what I've seen happen is like people are like, oh crap, pitcher's going, I need to get a pitcher. And then they start jumping guys. So you go, wait a minute, like there's more risk with the type of pitcher you're jumping. Looks good in a format where you have ad drops. I think you take him and you go, look, when he gets hurt, I'll just put him on the DL or I'll drop him. You can't do that in best ball. If he gets hurt, he's stuck on your roster. And so I'd say that's probably the biggest trend I've seen is people are more aggressive on pitching. I think to some extent people are aggressive, over-aggressive on pitching. I think this year I will find myself swerving a little bit more and having some more hitter-heavy teams than I would have in years past because of I think people are letting hitters fall.
I think that's a good point, and I know it's still I keep referencing the NFBC 50s, and I want to clarify for everybody. I'll try not to clarify every time. That's a draft and hold format. It's still
important to know, though. Yeah,
it's you can adjust your roster, but there's still no ad drops, so it's different. But there are some similarities when you're drafting things. And one thing I did there, because you said that the hitters were falling, they were. So I was getting hitter heavy, and I'm like, you know what? I'll just add a few extra pitchers at the end.
Just make up in volume. Yeah.
And, like, you know, when you have the chance, especially there where you can – best ball is the same, basically. But where you can pick and choose what weeks you want to start them. Best ball obviously picks the good weeks to play them. So you can go, like, okay, screw it. I'm not going to pitch them, you know, maybe 3/4 of the season. But those 4 2-star weeks they have, I'm throwing them out there. And it's awesome. Yeah. And that works in that scenario. So I'm with you there. What is your usual philosophy? Is it like 60-40 pitching hitting? I know you might go heavier this year, like you said. What do you usually go for?
So when I'm looking at how I value players, I go straight down the middle. I do not use a split like with the best ball format. I do based on roster settings, you know, you're going to take a certain amount of pitchers, a certain amount of hitters. And I tend to think of it more in that way. But as far as like when I run through my personal valuations, I know, you know, a lot of, you know, if you run an auction calculator, they're going to force like a split, a pitcher dollar split. I do not do that. My thought process being is that you don't need, it doesn't matter where your points come from. If you get all your points in hitting, if you somehow miraculously get every, the greatest hitters of all time and your pitchers bomb, if that's enough to win, that's enough to win. It doesn't, you know, it's not like in Roto where half your points have to come from pitchers, right? Sure. And so because of that, I don't make an adjustment. I have a replacement value adjustment based on the number of pitchers I think will be drafted, but not necessarily like a force hitter pitcher split.
That's such a great concept though, that I don't think many people even think about that. In Roto, you have to get pitcher points. You have to get hitter points. So right. You don't have a choice. Like you want to get the most balanced upside type team in theory. Obviously there's angles to it.
You could tank, right. Things like that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You could tank saves if you want to do this, that, but you still need these categories to come at some point in time, where in best ball, you just want points. And that's why even with pitchers, it's like, obviously you get more points for like wins and saves and stuff.
But right.
Hey, if you get a great setup, man, like Devin Williams, who strikes out 50 guys in 20 something innings, he's going to get you a bunch of points. And, you know, you got him in around 49 probably last year or something.
Yeah, so, unfortunately, you're not getting him in 49 this year.
No, I think I took him in our draft, I think. Yeah. And I'm going to go – I'll look real quick here. I got him at round 14. I thought that fell farther than I thought he would. I thought he'd
go earlier. I was going to look up what his ADP was in the drafts I've been. But he's definitely – like, he, you know, people aren't sleeping on him. You know, I mean, he's going.
Well, because if they trade Hader, he's going to walk right into that save situation.
Yeah, and I think even more than that, I think people are recognizing that, like, you know, he can have some, even if Hader doesn't get traded, he's not a nothing.
Yeah,
you know, I was gonna try and tap dance while I pulled this up. I'm not gonna do it. You know, he's still gonna get you something.
Yeah, and he's gonna get a lot of appearances. He's not gonna be like a, you know, here and there guy. He's probably gonna pitch 3 to 4 times a week. And he's so he's gonna get his. And there's other teams like that. So that's one thing I noticed. When I get later in drafts, I start looking for those kind of relievers. I'm like, you know, they might get a few saves here and there, but if anything, they'll get you good innings and they're going to get you points that way, you know, in case you have a bad week somewhere. But we mentioned the pitching trends. Are there any other trends you're looking at that are standing out? Like, are certain things going earlier than others that you're not used to, or anything along those lines?
You know, we have a lot of uncertainty about guys coming over, international players this year, or guys coming back here. That's kind of unique. I don't know that I remember having that many. You know, usually it'd be like one guy, you know, a couple of years ago it was, you know, Kelly, and then it was, you know, Thames. Like, yeah. It's like a couple. And now it's like, there's like some legit guys, you know, who could be difference makers, and we just don't know. You know, we think they're coming over. We think that's all going to happen. So I think that's actually a little unique. There's a little more uncertainty. And then coupled with that, you have the uncertainty around prospects. So I think normally we would have a really good idea of when these guys are going to come up. And I don't know. I feel much less confident this year than I have in years past.
Yeah.
And you've seen it in the ADP. Like, so if you look at, I don't have it with me, the 2018, is that the year that Acuna came up?
I think 18? So, yes.
18. Yeah. So like people were drafting him in the top 10 rounds. Like,
oh, yeah.
He was being aggressively drafted. And I think Wander Franco, even though he's not the same type of player, like he's that level of skill, people aren't drafting him there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we just don't know. And some of that's the Rays, but I think some of it is we just don't know. You know, we have one less year of data than we normally have. So I think those are both kind of unique to this season, this lack of minor league season that we had.
Now, when it comes to that, because obviously these prospects, you don't know when they're going to come up. These foreign players, you don't know where they're going to sign, if they're going to sign. So many question marks. So let's just group it together. Players with question marks. How aggressive are you? Or do you just like completely cross them off your draft list? What like everyone's got a price. So like, if guys call, you obviously are going to try and take them. But are there certain guys where you're like, you know what, where their ADP's at, there's no way I'm drafting these kind of guys.
So I have not drafted prospects. So I will probably not own a single share of Franco. I will not own some of these other guys that are getting drafted. They just won't be on my roster. One exception, If the guys played last year, like if they played in the playoffs, if they got a cup of coffee, like I probably will keep those guys kind of, you know, because that just to me shows a team willing to let
them. Like a Kirilov maybe?
Kirilov is a great example. Yeah. Like he's a guy who I
would. And they just got rid of Rosario. So it's like, okay, we're kind of opening the door, folks.
Yeah. That's what it kind of seems like. So that's a guy where I think it's a little bit different. But most of these other prospects, I'm not going to touch them. And if I miss out, like I miss out. That's just, you know.
That's kind of how I am, even in like season longs, yearly. A guy's got to fall for me. Like I've never had Luis Robert. I've never like all these guys because as fun as they are, as great as they are, I play DFS. I'll play them in DFS. Like I'll have my fun there because there's just so much volatility where, you know, some guys are great at fantasy because they can take risks and then find ways to fix it. Yeah. I'm more of a, I want a really strong floor and then we'll go make things happen kind of guy. Yeah. And those guys don't give me that floor at least going into it.
Right.
Yeah, you mentioned Wander Franco. He's a very popular one. He's a little banged up now. The Rays are the Rays. I know Jason Collette came out recently saying they're not going to bring him up until he's, you know, eligible. Like, they're just not going to. It's the Rays' way. So then it comes down to, well, what's the season format going to look like? There's so many question marks with Franco. Like, we never saw Kalinic last year when everyone kept saying we're going to see Jared Kalinic. It's a tough one. And if you know, a 50-man roster, losing one guy shouldn't completely destroy your team. It shouldn't. But where you're taking them in the draft could destroy your team.
Well, and I think when you start talking 40-man rosters, I think that you start – and the other difference is, and this is something I don't think people adjust well to, draft and hold versus best ball. But when I'm looking at a best ball team, I expect every player on my team to contribute towards my team. Mm-hmm. So when I say that is like even my 40th round player, like I expect them to contribute. Now, some guy – you know, my third catcher is less likely to contribute than, you know, my 16th pitcher. But I expect my 16th pitcher to get in there. Mm-hmm. And when you're playing a draft and hold format where you're setting a lineup, you're hoping you don't have to start your 16 pitcher, right? Like you draft them as if you might, but the reality is like you're only playing them in a spot where you definitely think you're going to get some benefit.
It's a break glass in case of emergency situation.
Right. Yeah. Right. Versus in best ball, you don't have to guess when they're going to be good. They'll just, they'll pop when they pop. And so I think that people struggle with that adjustment and they think of those last five rounds as throwaway picks and they're not like they're really, I did some research before the 2020 season and basically like teams that won, they crushed their last five picks. Now it doesn't mean that those players played every week, but they got significant value from those players. And so like, it's important to be critical with every pick.
No, that makes a ton of sense. It really does. You know, every little bit you can get out of every position is going to go a long ways because you're going to have injuries along the way. You're going to have guys hit slumps. Even the best players hit a slump. So if you got that one guy from each little spot, chip in here and there.
Yep.
Even exactly. If it's just a few points, it goes a long, long way. So I like that quite a bit. When you're looking at the current best ball format right now, looking at like say our league, or let's just have fun. It could be our league. It could be any of them you've done. What are some of the names that you're seeing maybe on your ADP sheet that are coming off as like some big values for you? Like you're seeing going, wow, these guys keep falling and it's really not changing at all type stuff.
Yeah. So, and some of this you'll see is more my philosophy than it is anything else, but I tend to be looking not necessarily for the sexy picks as much as I am like the guys who I just think people are either misreading playing time or they're just not taking advantage of the upside of an older player who maybe, you know, they could get hot, they could be, you know, or just the fact that how much value consistency is, especially when you start talking later in the draft. So one guy I'm on now, I kind of broke these down into guys in the 300s and guys in the 400s. Okay. And I may be out on a limb on a couple of these. You may think I'm crazy.
Oh, it'll be fun.
Shogo Akiyama.
Love it.
Specifically in Fantrax where it's an OBP based format. So you're getting points for your walks. You don't get points for doubles or triples. So you get points for hits and home runs. So guys like him who maybe, you know, he's not going to hit a bunch of home runs, but I expect him to hit. And I think he will, you know, he'll have a lot of singles. I think he has value, you know, a similar value to a guy who would hit the same amount of like doubles or something like that. I think he's going to hit at the top of that order for a good chunk of the season. You know, I think that they'll play around. They kind of move their lineup around a little bit, but he's a guy that I like, and I don't think last year, he's his first year in the league. You know, he's adjusting coming from another country. I'm not going to look at last year and say that's who he is, especially, you know, because I think he made improvements as the season went on. So he's a guy I'm getting a lot.
Well, and he walked a ton last year. Mm-hmm. And especially, okay, like you mentioned, he started off really slow. And then his second half, it started putting him every day at the leadoff spot. He wasn't really platooning as much. He walked a ton, and he stole a lot of bags in those last like 2 to 3 weeks. And if you can kind of put that into 2021 and say he does that for like three quarters of the season, and you're getting them where you're getting them in a points format, and that's what I want to keep hammering home is the points format so different. And you were breaking it down. There's guys that really don't seem like they're like sexy picks, but like a Brandon Belt, he walks a ton. He drives and runs. Yeah. Like, he's not great, but you're going to get him really, really late. He's going to be your second or third first baseman. Like, it's a guy that'll have some hot streaks that'll fill in. Like, I've had him circled for a while in our league that, you know, eventually I'm going to try to get him or someone along those lines. It's just one of those deals that there's certain players that go a lot better. I guess one thing they could say is you said it also, it's more of an OBP format. So when you're doing your projections, even if you're on, like you said, Fangraphs auction calculator or whatever, make sure you make it an OBP format. Don't make it a overcomplicate it. Like, just OBP, just go that route. It'll help you a ton.
And Shogo's going at like 375 ADP. Like, I'm going to take a guy who's starting, who I think is going to be starting most days. I'm going to take him in that price point.
No doubt about it. Who are some other guys you're looking at later?
So, you know, if you read Jeff Zimmerman's Mining the News, which you should if you're not.
If you're listening to this show, you better be listening to like, or reading Mining the News.
There's so many tidbits in there. But one, he talked about Mike Mayers. It was one of the first ones coming off the – I think that's how you say his last name. He's the Angels relief pitcher. I think he's a guy I'm taking a chance on. I hope he gets the closer job. Like, you know, like, and again, it's because he's going late. If he's a good pitcher. Like, so if I'm going to take a risk on a guy who doesn't have the job, I want him to be a guy who I think is going to be good. So I don't want, you know, like, I don't like, I don't know. I'm not going to take a chance on a guy who's kind of on the edge of the closing job if he's not a good pitcher, because I think he's going to lose it. And, you know, guys who aren't good pitchers, like, they're not giving you those couple, three or four strikeouts a week, you know, even if they don't get saves. So he's a guy I like to take a chance on. Again, late. You're talking the 300s, back into the 300s. I think he's an interesting guy to be trying to sneak some saves, some closer opportunity out of.
I like that call quite a bit. I took him in my NFBC 50 late. Yeah. What I wanted to ask you there, since it is a points format and we're not requiring X amount of innings or starts or any of that nonsense that we might do in a season long, how do you – obviously starting pitchers can get more points in their starts than relievers and closers, but it's not always the case. So how do you go about differentiating starters, closers, or just kind of how the draft flows? Do you prefer starters over closers? What do you go?
Normally I would prefer starters over closers. This year with the uncertainty around pitcher injuries, I'm actually leaning – I end up taking more relievers. Obviously that's a little risky because we know as every year's progressed, you know, closers, defined closers become more and more rare. So that's why I'm looking for a type of relief pitcher. So I'll take an elite closer if I feel like they have the job, and they are a good pitcher, then I will take those guys. And if they lose the job, okay. But I still want to take those guys later. I don't, you know, there's a couple guys I'll jump. I'll take Hendricks. I'll take, who else am I? I've taken some Ryan Pressly, guys like that who I feel relatively comfortable that they have the job. I'll take those guys. But then I don't want those middle group, those guys who are like not good. You know, Matt Barnes is a great example of guy. Like, he's got the job. I don't know if he's good. Like, and I know that Boston's not good.
See, it's in situations like that is where I wanted to go with it, because like you mentioned Mike Mayer from Anaheim. You mentioned Boston. You have Dorian Hernandez back there. That's right. A flamethrower, maybe a future closer. Like, I don't mind taking a chance on him late in a draft. Now, you have like the locked in guys like you mentioned, and then you have this kind of glob. Do you maybe target later in drafts getting the globs potential backups as your pitching options, or do you go for like a fifth starter somewhere? Like, how do you differentiate where you want to go?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, if I'm still filling out my starting, so you start nine pitchers in Fantrax, I don't want to have questionable closers in my top nine pitchers, like at all. So until the starters start to run out, unless somebody just falls a lot farther than I think they should, I don't want a closer to be one of those guys. That's not that one. I don't want one of those middling closers to be one of those guys, if that makes sense.
No.
Makes sense. And then later, if I'm going to take a risk on a guy, yeah, it is somebody who I think could take a job or is going to get multiple inning appearances. And so that then maybe I could get 4 to 5 innings out of them in a week and sneak a win, some strikeouts. Yeah, like I think those guys are valuable specifically in this last year and this year because, you know, starters aren't pitching as long. They're getting hurt a lot. Like, so I don't think that's a forever trend personally. Like, you know, I think we are going to like as when starters start to stabilize again, you know, you'll see more consistent 5 inning guys and things like that. Next year, I bet we can see a lot of like what we saw this year, which is like much fewer guys who are going deep into games.
All right. We've kind of tiptoed around it by saying this season many times. Yeah. It's a listener question that let me pull it up, get to it now, and then we'll deal with the rest of listener questions later. But I just want to get this out here on a more of a open format. This is from last week when we were supposed to record, but yeah, I screwed that one up. So let me see here. At Perfect Papa asks, if you were to take a wild guess, how many games will be scheduled or played next season? How many do you think actually get played? Does the length of the season affect strategy of picking players? I think that's a very important question when you're planning for this. So, like, first off, we'll break this down into sections. Right now, when you're drafting, are you drafting in your head on a full season?
Yes.
Okay. What do you think will happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you have to draft with the best information you have right now. And as far as we know, it's a full season. If you would have asked me a few weeks ago, I would have felt very confident we were getting a full season. But we're starting to see grumblings, and it seems like it's mostly going to be about money. And that, you know, if the players play a full season, my guess is they're going to want their full salaries, and the owners don't want to pay that. So, you know, it seems like maybe that's what, you know, I wonder if we see some type of abbreviated season, or maybe we see something in between. You know, maybe we get full season, but it's like a shortened schedule. So we have the 7 inning doubleheaders back, or I don't know, like, but it seems unlikely we're going to get 162 games normal season. Which I get again, surprise, like that's what it kind of just feels like they're talking about right now.
Yeah. That's the feeling I have. Like, I'm with you. Like, a few weeks back, I was very calm. Like, spring training schedules are coming.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, we're rolling. Like, it's going to happen. Like, I wasn't confident in like big people, like groups and stands. I'm still not confident in that.
But
we're going to play ball. Like, football, as goofy as it is, they're playing. NBA's rocking and rolling into their season. Yeah. Hockey's like, all these things are working. And it always comes back to, I've said it even last year, if these guys want to play, they will stay safe and make it work. Like, that's just, it comes down to that. That's the grand scheme of it. But now, like you're saying, it's really depressing, kind of how it was last year. It comes down to money every stinking time. When these guys make billions of dollars every year and you took one hit, I'm sorry. Like, really, plan better. You're an accountant. Basically, like, you know, shouldn't you have, like, a program here so you don't lose everything in one year when you're an owner of a baseball team? But it's going to be interesting. I'm thinking 130-ish, 140 is probably more relevant. Like, they'll wait for all the vaccines to come out. They'll do all, because by then, if you think 130-ish or so, that's like a June-ish start.
Right.
You think all the vaccines have hopefully been out by March or
April. At least, right, they're starting to get out. Yeah.
Yeah, so then you can start seeing like the CDC or someone going, okay, you can have like a third of your stadium, or you could have a half. Mm-hmm. Like, and then the owners start saying, okay, we can make a little money, we can pay you. Like, then it starts to kind of make everybody happy. That's where I see it going.
And I think the way that affects you if you're drafting, the only thing I can come up with personally that I think it would affect is these guys who are recovering from long-term injuries. So if you're somebody who is interested in drafting Noah Syndergaard, Luis Severino, Sale, like if you're the kind of person who's wanting to draft those guys, I'm not. I don't care how much of a season we have. I'm not drafting those guys. But it becomes more palatable when they're only going to miss 30 games or 40 games as opposed to 80 games or something like that. So then I think those kind of guys maybe become a little more interesting. But that's not a gamble I'm super interested in jumping on. But I do think that's the type of player that actually changes value in this context.
No, I agree. That changed value for me last year for guys when we started drafting the second go-around of drafts, not the first ones, but the second go-around of drafts. I took a few more gambles on certain guys.
Yeah.
And okay, they're going to be good, but I still be kind of nervous on this full season and how it's going. on the flip side, we kind of talked about prospects earlier and foreign players. Mm-hmm. Well, we just saw a bunch of guys get non-tendered. Like, we got the Rosarios, Mikel Franco actually came off a good year, who in points was actually decent. Like, I had him circled. I was going to take him like 4 days ago. Then he gets non-tendered. I'm like, Isaiah Kinnear-Falefa it is.
Yeah.
What are you doing with those guys? Because the talent level is really good, and you imagine they're going to sign, but they could sign in a platoon or something. So where are you going there?
Yeah, I'm treating them all a little bit different. You know, Rosario, wherever you were going to draft him before, you know, I think you'd just take off a round maybe, because I doubt that whatever offense he goes to is probably not going to be as good as the offense he was in. You know, that offense, I guess, wasn't going to be as good as it was last year probably either. But, you know, so I might dip him a little bit. Schwarber, there's a chance he's in a platoon, which, you know, and like a strict platoon where he, you know, so you got to knock some of the playing time off there. So, you know, for me, I'm going to watch. If those guys fall some, you know, the talent didn't change. I think they will, you know, I feel pretty confident they'll get jobs. I'm in on them.
Yeah.
Franco, I'm a little more nervous about. He had a good year, but he has to go to a bad team because a good team's not going to play him every day. At least I don't think so. Like, you know, and I, you know, I think that's something you have to worry about. You know, like if the Orioles, if he signs with the Orioles, okay, I can live with that. You know, if he signs with a team that is maybe not like at the height of their, you know, competitive curve, like then I think he's locked into a full-time job and he'll play most days and you can be happy with that. That's why I was happy, you know, when he was on the Royals, I thought that was a great spot for him because he's trying to kind of, you know, bounce back, solidify himself as a player worth playing. And he's good. I don't want to take it away from, like, I think he's good, but I always worry about fringy-ish guys that could lose their jobs if they're on a competitive team.
All right. And that'll kind of take another full circle approach here. I'm approaching the season as there's going to be a DH. I'm thinking they're using it as a bargaining tool with the players. Like, hey, you're not going to get it, but we'll give it to you if you give us this, because in the end, you know, if you add the DH, it's 16 more jobs. Like, it does so many things.
Everybody has to, I don't understand. It seems like everybody wants this. Like, like nobody's like, oh, we got, I mean, it's as far as baseball, it doesn't seem like there's anybody in baseball who's like, we can't have this.
So it's just that deal. And so, like, I was, you know, I wrote up first base and third base for the Black Book, and a lot of those guys played a boatload of games at designated hitter.
Yeah.
So if you start, say, for some weird reason, we don't get DH. Well, guys we're drafting now could take some hits. Do you take that into consideration? Because I'm playing it like there's a DH, so I'm not, and I'm just going to get screwed if it happens. But how are you going about it?
I'm playing it like there is going to be a DH. Thankfully, most of the guys I'm kind of eyeball that I tend to fall, like not too many of them would be slapped by it. But it does trickle down, right? Like Cincinnati's a great example, right? Like they have too many outfielders. Like, you know, like and they're good. Like it's not that they're bad. And so it's like, you know, if they don't have a DH, like where does Senzel, like does Senzel definitely get a spot on the infield? Like, you know, they've got Winker, Akiyama, Castellanos, like they have a lot of bodies. And so like if they don't have the DH, that squinches everybody. So even if the player you're drafting isn't necessarily a guy who's a full-time DH, he might get some squish kind of trickle down. But I'm personally going to just go ahead and assume that there's a DH.
Yeah, I'm with you as well, and I'm hoping to get that figured out. It's going to be a long offseason. So let's
hop in. It seems crazy that they haven't figured that out yet.
It's just a stupid bargaining chip. It's really all it is, just politics. Let's get in some listener questions here from our buddy Brian Seymour at the Fantasy Best Ball Exclusive Podcast. Fantrax pitching gets super deep. ADP doesn't mean as much getting to pick 300. What do you look for in drafting pitching past this point? We kind of hit on it, but do you want to reiterate real quick?
Yeah, because so I'm looking for good relievers who have a chance at saves, and I'm looking for bad starting pitchers who I think keep their jobs. So again, that's starting pitchers on bad teams. The Royals were a great spot for this in the past, like because they just didn't care. I mean, like they just these guys, they'd have, you know, almost five ERAs and they'd get 180 innings. And it's like, okay, like in a best ball point format where you only are going to get their good starts. That's great. Like, you know, so, guys at the tail end of bad rotations are a great spot for best ball pitchers.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit, and it's sneaky. It doesn't look good.
No, it's not sexy. It's no one's going great pick. You know, Danny Duffy was on every roster of mine the last 2 years.
Danny Duffy for the last four rounds in ours. Just going, I know he's going to give me paybacks throughout the season.
He's not good, but like, you know, or it hasn't been good. No, right.
Like, and then I look at Chris Bubik going, yeah, later in the draft, he will get his points.
Again, like, he has a job. Yep. Yeah.
Exactly. It's crazy. You got to just turn the mindset off. At Zach Roto asks, he says, how many games played for, are you discounting for Senzel, Dahl, Haniger, and Bucks, and Dahl now gone? Yeah. Or just rank them from most games played to least.
So I will, if I remember, Buxton is going to be number one on that, which is crazy that you can make a list that I'm putting him as the number one in the playing time. And I do, if you're somebody who adjusts projections for playing time, you have to adjust Buxton playing time.
That's why I took him for the best ball, because if he's playing, he's putting up points.
Yeah, he's good when he plays, but you have to be prepared that he might miss some time. And that's fine. As long as it's baked into the price, take him, and you know, you just try and get what you can get. Senzel's – we think he's talented, we think, because I don't think we've had a long enough sample in the majors to really know for sure. He's a guy who, if you look at his injury history, it's a bunch of weird stuff. There's some kind of repetitive stuff in there, but there's some weird stuff in there. I want to see a full season from Senzel before I'm investing. So I'm not probably drafting him, but if I had to rank him, it's above Haniger, no question. I Mitch burned me 2 years in a row, but I don't know how you can put any kind of faith in Mitch Haniger until we see him back on a baseball field.
Yeah, it's tough.
Like,
it's really tough.
Because last year we were doing this. Going into it, they were like, he's going to be fine. He's going to be ready by the time the season starts. We're all good. And then he never played.
Yeah, he's supposed to be healthy and good to go, like you said, and then nothing. I was like, what the heck just happened there?
Yeah.
That was quite bizarre. A couple more listener questions here. We got Adam Scott at AS Goldie asks, there are several players, Judge, Dahl again, Pollock. Everyone loves Dahl. It's so funny. Dahl, that are injured more than the average player. But when they are healthy, they can put up amazing weeks or even a month. Is this player more valuable than a steady compiler like Goldschmidt? He usually avoids streaky players. So he's curious because he usually avoids them. But he's wondering, in a best ball format, because we know how good they can be when they're playing, are they more valuable than the kind of slow and steady plotter?
So I look at when I think streaky, I think performance streaky, not injury streaky. So when I think streaky, I think Aldoberto Mondesi. Right. Cause he's a guy who's like been really down and then just incredible. He's been a guy of runs. I think, Justin Upton is another good example of a guy like this, not as much as his brother was, but like just runs. Like he's just a guy who, like, as soon as you're ready to drop him, he just takes off and he's, you know, he's just, so though that's streaky to me. When I think of injury guys, I'm more, you know, saying, okay, as long as I don't have to pay Aaron Judge price, if I don't have to pay, you know, 650 plate appearances of Aaron Judge, if I don't have to pay that price, I might consider him. But in my opinion, most people, he will not go far enough to reflect the amount of time I expect him to miss.
There's always like a few guys in every draft that still believes.
Yeah. And I think some of that's philosophy. There's always somebody who's saying, look, I want to take the talent, right? I'll just take the talent. I think Pollock is different because he's really reasonably priced player. You know, I think he's a guy that if you say he's my, you know, back into my starting outfield, maybe the number six guy on my team, sixth outfielder on my team, something like that, which I think that's about where he's going in these best balls. Like, I'd be okay with that. You know, as long as you make sure that you have enough outfielders around him so that when he does get hurt, you got another guy to kind of take the
and punch. Pollock brings up a question for me. He plays about 60 to 70% of the games, but he's kind of in a platoon, not a strong platoon, but in a platoon. We know the Dodgers do a lot of platooning. Some other teams have some. When you're drafting, it's like the old football handcuff strategy with running backs. Mm-hmm. Do you try to do that in best ball or do you say no?
No, I don't want to do that in best ball. I want to have as much – I want to have upside that kind of measured upside, if you will. And so if you're taking both sides of a platoon, you have one player. And so I would rather have two players who are on the strong side of a platoon than one player than two players that give you the whole side of the platoon, if that makes sense.
That makes a ton of sense.
But I don't love – if I'm going to take a platoon player, they got to be on a good team to make it really worth it. Yeah, right. So Pollock's a good example of that. But I don't want to take a platoon player on the
The Royals.
Yeah. I mean, not to just pound them, the Tigers. Like, I'm not taking a platoon player for the Tigers. You know, that makes sense.
That makes a ton of sense. Art from Triple Play Fantasy asked us, does Derek know of any pitchers who have recovered from carpal tunnel surgery? And if so, does he have thoughts on Steven Strasburg?
So I don't know of any. I've looked into this. I could not find any good examples of this surgery on a starting pitcher. What I would say is I'm less concerned about the carpal tunnel than I am about everything else. You know, you look at Steven Strasburg's injury history on the injury timeline tool, and it's beautiful. It's very colorful.
Oh my gosh.
Like, yeah, the carpal tunnel is just the next, it's just the last thing. It's, you know, so I'm not taking it because of his entire injury history. I'm not necessarily more concerned about this recent injury relative to his other injuries.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense as well. That is the last listener question, but I do have a question for you in the best ball league we are in right now. How do you, let me pull up your roster here.
Well, and while you're doing that, I did see one listener question from the post last week, and it's not a fantasy baseball one, but it hit me in a soft way. So one of the guys, this is Open Bar Fantasy.
Open Bar Fantasy.
They're Central Illinois guys like I am, and their question was what my favorite horseshoe was from Darcy's. Now Darcy's is a local bar pub here in Central Illinois, nice. But most people who are not from my area have never heard of a horseshoe. A horseshoe is a Midwest special, and Bubba, I think you're gonna like this.
Okay,
it is an open face sandwich.
You already got me.
Yeah. Yep. So open face. you could do hamburger. The traditional is a hamburger with cheese, French fries over the top, and then a homemade cheese sauce that goes over the French fries. So it's just like
it's a Midwest Philly cheesesteak.
I mean, it is a glorious mess. But it is. Oh. I mean, it's one of those things that every now and again we have some folks come in from out of state. We had some people in from California, you know, and they're like, what is this? Like you guys eat this with some regularity. It's like, that's why our hospitals are very nice.
I love the Midwest. I don't know how much you've heard me talk about it, but I'm a big Wisconsin fan. I have friends that live in Milwaukee that have gone to Madison. So for a while there, when we got out of school, we were flying back every year to a game and visiting and driving around. And we've gone to other places in the Big Ten to watch games with Wisconsin and just kind of seen it all. I haven't gone to Champaign yet, but I've been to a bunch. And the people are amazing. Like the most down to earth, like literally, there's a couple trips where our main friend wasn't there. We just had Wisconsin gear on and we were invited anywhere we wanted to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Your family
like,
there.
It's beautiful. But like you said, the food, it's for a big guy like me. Like me and my buddy literally just the other day were sitting, like there's a bar in Milwaukee called Stinney's, and they have deep fried sauerkraut and roast beef.
Oh yeah, sure.
And the dipping sauce, like we've never heard of them before, and we were literally talking around them going, we really need to go back to Milwaukee here pretty soon. It's been a while. But just everything over there, the different beers, the different this, that traditions. I love the Midwest. I've told my wife I'd retire there. I just can't do the snow.
It's cold.
Full time.
It's very cold.
I don't mind the temperature. I driving on ice where I don't know it's coming scares the living snot out of me.
As it should. It is terrifying.
Because I've been in those situations. I see my buddy's vehicles that live there, and it's just like, I can't do it.
Yeah. I can't do it. Today was the first day we had frost on vehicles in my town, and I was like, oh, no. It's really here.
Oh yeah, no. Like when we get frost on our vehicles, it thaws out by like 6:30 in the morning. So I'm like, it was 31 this morning, but it's already like it was 77 yesterday afternoon.
Oh my gosh,
I'm like, I'm good. I can handle this. But I love visiting there. It's beautiful during like the summertime, early fall. Like everything about the Midwest is absolutely amazing. So are you an Illini fan?
I'm not. I'm not a huge college sports fan. If I'm like, you know, if I'm going to go to a game, it's going to be an Illini game. I'll drive over to Champaign. It's about an hour away. But much to the chagrin of my friends here, I am not an Illinois fan. So it's a constant annoyance for them.
Well, then are you a Bears fan?
I'm not. I'm a Packers fan. So Yes.
They love you there. They must love you in Illinois.
That's right. That's right. I really, and I don't like the Cardinals, and my area is kind of Cardinal Nation. So I really push all the buttons. Like, I'm just.
That's outstanding. Like, I respect that so much. Yeah. That's I could sit here and talk to you about this forever now. Like, I love everything about the Midwest, but the first time we went to Madison, we had to fly out on Sunday out of Milwaukee, and I'll never forget. We stopped at the bar next to the airport to grab lunch, and the sign said NFL Sunday Ticket. We're like, sweet, we'll go watch some games. And it says, watch all games here. It's like, awesome. You walk in, every game had the Green Bay game on.
Packers.
Yeah. And every game had it on. And I remember my buddy walks up to the bar. Like, the guy that lives there laughed at us. He's like, don't even bother. And my buddy goes, oh, we'll try. The sign says it out front. So he walks up, and they go, sir, if you want, there's one in the corner over there. I'll put it on for you. Other than that, this is if Green Bay is not playing, you're fine. Otherwise, this is it.
Any game that you want, as long as it's the Packers.
Have you been to Lambeau?
I have. I have been a couple times. I've been very fortunate. Yeah. It's a blast. It is.
We did that. That was probably one of the coolest. I'm a diehard baseball fan. Like, baseball over everything for me. But Lambeau is an experience. Like, you park on people's front lawns.
It's nuts.
Like, it's the craziest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
But we'll wrap it up with that. Plug away on everything you got again, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So you can find me Twitter's where you see a lot of my stuff. That's DRHOA3 on Twitter. Jag Fantasy Sports is where the injury tools reside. Those are free, available to everybody. If you're interested in the draft tool, that's over there on Jag Fantasy Sports too.
Awesome. Yeah, it's awesome stuff. If you are doing the rating and reviewing contest right now on the podcast, I said that you could do that till the 15th. If you don't have iTunes for some reason, that is fine. You could go to the YouTube page and like and subscribe to the YouTube page. And I'm going to give away one of Derek's best ball tools. So go check that out. And Derek, thanks for joining me, man. I had a blast talking to you, and we will definitely do it again sometime.
All right. Thanks, Bubba. Really appreciate it.
No problem, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 325, talking best ball and injuries with Derek Rhodes. See you later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.